Morning. So, stewardship. Some questions have come up. If you want to be canvassed, let me know. Otherwise, we're just going with what we sent off to you. And if you're interested in pledging and you've not received a package, find me. That's cool. The pledge card, some people have been having a little difficulty knowing where it is. This is the brochure, and on the brochure is the pledge card. So you fill this guy out and cut it off, or reach to the office if you want to do it electronically. Once you have pledged, we have now little stickers that have a route to go on your name tag. So make sure you pick one of those up, and also sign the route, because what we're doing is we're signing the route, and then we're filling the earth, so that when we get to our budget, we've got enough to nurture those roots deep. Okay? I guess that's about it. Dig deep, nurture those roots.
And I'm happy today to introduce our speaker, welcome him back. His name is James Galasinski. He's currently the intern minister at Unitarian Church North in Mequon. And in his final year at Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago. He has a Bachelor of Fine Arts from Cardinal Stritch University, freelances as a jazz bassist in the Milwaukee area, and is a member of First Unitarian Society of Milwaukee. James has been a pulpit guest in numerous UU churches throughout Wisconsin and Illinois, and several times for us here. He also brings a guest musician, Ryan Meisel. He is a composer, arranger, and multi-saxophonist, got his Bachelor's of Music at the UW-Madison, and his Master's from the Northern Illinois University. He currently teaches music in the Hartford School District and leads his own group, the Meisel Music Collective.
Thank you.
This is a home where no revealed truths are promoted, and no scripture or human being is accepted as infallible. This is a place where we search for truth together. But we are believers. We believe in intellectual freedom. We believe in justice. We believe in compassion and concern for each other and the whole world. We believe in commitment to those ideals which makes us caring and active in the struggles for human dignity and for a respected earth. We are Unitarian Universalists. It is good to be together. Let us worship.
Joy and grief, health and sickness, light and darkness, peace and anger, life and death, wholeness and brokenness. We each bring all of these here to the sanctuary of unity in diversity. For this one hour of this one day, and pour them out, commingling the oil of our lives to become the flame of this chalice, the symbol of the shared living faith. Please rise and join in spirit our opening hymn, number 368, Now Let Us Sing. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. Whoever you are, whomever you love, however you connect with your higher power, you are welcome here. Whatever your challenges and gifts, and whatever your adventures may have taken you, we welcome you. We are so glad that you've come here to worship with us this morning. We hope that you will find today's service and our church community nourishing to your spirit. I am Laura Levenhagen, today's worship associate. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in the social hall after the service. And if you are new to our church, please stop by the welcome table and you can find out more about LCUUC there. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everybody joining in, whether you be a friend, a member, or just a visitor today. Please take a moment to silence all your electronics that you have here with you today. And again, welcome to everybody here this morning. We are so pleased that you've chosen to worship with us. The purpose of the church is to encourage all who gather here to grow more generous in spirit and in action. This is the great end of all the world's faith traditions, to bring the human being closer to the divine by acts of creation and compassion. We now take an offering that allows us to exercise that all-important generosity of the Spirit, an offering that will support this self-supporting church and its ministries. Thanks for the gifts given and received for the work of this community. One of the ways that we care for the wider community is by contributing to local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items that we donate each month. If you have brought a food item to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service, or ask a child to bring them forward for you. And I invite the children now to come up and enjoy a story for all ages.
Okay, this time with children is going to include everybody, so it doesn't really matter where the children are. We can all be children this morning. We're going to have time with children as a whole group today, using the language and style of the blues to come together as a congregation to create something together that is greater than each individual. So, you're going to have to repeat after me, and we're going to split everybody into two groups. So we'll have the children and everyone in this section, you're group one. And then group two is over here. So if you're group one, raise your hand. If you're group two, raise your hand. Okay, now, James is going to give me a couple notes. Now that's called doo-dot. You got it. Now sing after me. Doo-dot.
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 Oh, very good. Next note. Doo-dot.
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 Now let's try it with me, without me singing.
Doo-dot.
All right, here we go.
Children will follow out Zeke bearing the lantern, and we can sing them out using the song, Go Now in Peace. The words are in your order service. Invite Megan Fetters up to give her stewardship speech.
Well, when Al asked me to say a few words, he did not tell me I would be following a jazz performance. So I'm a little bit more linear and analytical than maybe that group is. So I'm actually not really going to talk much about the why, because I think the why is things like this, the spontaneous music. But I will talk a little bit about the how, and I suppose this is targeted maybe more at folks who haven't made that commitment yet to become a member or are still deciding how much to jump in. So the first time I stepped in this building, it was actually 2007, a long time ago. It was to visit the Lifeways daycare that was running space here at the time. And I didn't give much thought to visiting the church itself. I mean, I was familiar with UU from growing up, but I just wasn't looking for that at the time. We had just purchased a lot nearby, and I wasn't even sure I wanted to leave our old house in downtown Waukesha and move way out here to the country, even if we did have sidewalks. So we did, in fact, move out here. And I passed by the church for years and years, just trips to the grocery store, to the library. Then as our life became more centered around Swallow School, it came a little bit more into my field of vision, or was there more often, maybe a little more into focus, I should say. Interestingly, before I even ever visited the service, I found myself recommending it to some friends who were thinking about finding another church, and I thought, well, gee, that's a little silly, isn't it? Other things happened, were also happening that summer that it gave me reason to seek out a spiritual home. And I visited for the first time in August 2012. I have no idea what that first service was about, or really any of the first few services I went to. But I do remember very distinctly Dave Cicero's very friendly welcome, or Dave, when I first came in that day. I also found that Zeke really was happy to accompany me. Interestingly, he has always been really fond of hymns, and he can make it even through a Catholic mass as long as he's allowed to sing the hymns. So I signed Zeke up for Sunday school after a couple visits and became kind of a two-times-a-month attendee, you know, maybe going to the occasional dinner after church, but that was about it. And at the time, I remember thinking, people are always saying that it was the people they love so much about this church. But to be honest, I wasn't quite feeling that yet in the beginning. I mostly socialized with the people that I already knew in the social hall after service. Well, then in February of last year, I had a major family crisis and spoke up for the first time during Joys and Concerns. That day in the social hall, one of the members came up and just gave me this enormous hug. No questions, no anything, just, you know, a huge hug. And another person came up and, you know, just kind of engaged in some sympathetic conversation without really probing as to what was going on, because it was clear there was something painful. I started to feel a little bit what people were talking about. Over the course of last spring, I visited a few other churches, really kind of looking for better answers to this sort of crisis, moral crisis that my family issues had brought to light. And each of them had some good points, but they kind of felt formulaic. And I didn't think I could stand a place where every reading and lesson was from the Bible. Not that there's anything wrong with it, just, you know, every week maybe seemed a bit much. Also, no one had name tags in these churches except the visitors. And I thought, well, that's not really, I mean, the visitors, they need, they're the ones who need help with the names. The people who are there every week are the ones who should wear the name tags. I really like that about this place. Anyway, I came back just before the ministerial search committee had sort of their second chance at a match with Amy. And that was really a turning point for me. I really felt heartened that LCUC had made it to this goal. And it was something that was critical to me in deciding to come into a committed relationship with the congregation. So last fall, in an attempt to, actually, I guess it was a year ago spring, in an attempt to nurture Zeke's interest, continued interest in attending, I agreed to teach in his RE class, from which I was then drafted onto the RE committee. Harry's not here to refute this, but it was drafting. I have no idea what my qualifications were or are to do either, but I found that I'm really happy to grow in my relationships with other members and to help out in a program that I really very directly benefit from. It is also a lot of fun being with the younger kids. Through this fall, I continued to kind of enjoy the services, but still looked at my membership as primarily something I was doing for Zeke. It was really sort of to, you know, give him this world of a church to grow up in. Now, I will say I've been flirting with the idea of joining the choir since my very first visit, which Karen will know, but I did not really feel confident that that was something I could do. My mother had always brought us to church as kids for the music, and I've always loved hymns and other spiritual music. I'm not, however, a trained singer. I have no choral experience. When the call came out for extra holiday singers this fall, I looked at this as an opportunity for me to try it out without a lot of commitment. Sort of like, isn't it? Well, anyway, I was hooked. I'm still not a stellar singer, but I work at it, and I remember enough of my musical training to practice on my own, picking out the alto part slowly on our probably out-of-tune piano. The rehearsal hour on Sunday morning actually became one of my favorite hours of the week. It really feels like it was something that I was doing just for me, nothing to do with anyone else. I mean, the group is nice, but not doing it for my kid. When you have a young child, you do a lot for your kids. And so this really, for me, was me time. Anyway, so it's sort of evolving. So I guess I sort of have this analogy that I think of membership in the church as sort of like a romantic relationship, right? There's a little bit of, you know, there's that initial attraction. Then you sort of feel, oh, this is right. This is really right. But at the end of the day, like any relationship, it's a lot of work. And you get out of it what you put into it. And I look at this as a relationship that really is going to evolve. It has evolved already. New layers will be revealed with every activity you go to, every event that you help with, certainly with every committee you are on. And I just want to suggest to anyone considering membership, or those of you who are already members, don't feel like you have to be in a rush and jump in and do everything, but do something. I guess building and maintaining a congregation and our relationship with you, to each other as members is really sort of a marathon, not a sprint, to use sort of an overused analogy. Your energy, time, and companionship, and of course your money, are part of what make this place tick. So please think about your relationship to LCUUC as we work toward membership and stewardship goals this year.
This is the time in our service where we share our joys and concerns, and we do this in two ways, by speaking them aloud and by lighting candles. Would anyone who has a joy or a sorrow to share, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone. Tell us your first name and then briefly tell us the joy or sorrow you'd like to share, and I'll light a candle for you.
Good morning. I'm Terry, and yesterday we were walking slash hiking, whatever you want to call it, in the Horicon Marsh, and we saw a caterpillar. Y'all know what that means.
Hello, I'm John, way back here in the corner. My daughter, Sarah, is in Chile right now as an exchange student for several months, and she's doing great. She just started school this past week, and she's loving it. So joy for that.
Hi, I'm Barb. Continued concern for my friend Sharon, who is undergoing chemotherapy and radiation for very aggressive and difficult lung cancer. So I ask for your good thoughts and healing wishes.
Hi, I'm Chris. If you could light a candle of concern for a friend of mine from my hometown. She's married to a wonderful man. They're farmers, and he has stage 4 bladder cancer. They have 12 children, and they just had to sell all their cows, and this is their life mission, I guess, and he's pretty much dying. And as she posts updates, I just can't get this family out of my mind, because I can't imagine having 12 kids and literally having to sell the farm. So thanks.
Al here. Candle of joy for Eric Moraine's path into Buddhism, his meditation class that's on Thursday. This past Thursday, we were talking about the challenge that, well, personally I have, and I suspect others do, of this whole, you know, I know the truth, I'm right concept in terms of religion. And Eric related a story of a son of a Brahma coming to Siddhartha and asking what the truth was, and what are the Brahmas right? Is Buddha right? Who's right? And as best as I can tell, the answer was to the effect of, you get on a raft to get to the other side of the river. It really doesn't matter what the raft is, as long as you get to the other side. I found that comforting.
Hi, a candle of joy. As my mother-in-law battles stage 4 cancer, in between her chemo, she felt the courage finally to take a trip to Arizona. I just took the two of them to the airport on Thursday to take a couple weeks and visit family there, so I'm pretty happy that she's breaking out and using the time she has.
And I'll light our final candle for the joys and sorrows we keep in our hearts. Our first reading today is a responsive reading, number 445, in your blue hymnal. I'll read the bold if you'll read the italics. No, this one. Great. The womb of stars. The womb of stars embraces us. Remnants of their fiery furnaces pulse through our veins. We are of the earth. We breathe and live in the breath of ancient plants and beasts. Our fingers trace the curves carved in clay and stone by forebears unknown to us. We gather anew this day to celebrate our common heritage.
May we recall in gratitude all that has given us birth.
I invite you into a spirit of meditation. Set aside whatever you are holding in your hands. Perhaps set aside whatever you are holding onto in your heart or in your head. Just for a few moments, set aside those things. Take a posture that allows you to be open, relaxed, and fully present. If you wish, you may close your eyes or you may choose to keep them open and focus on a single point or an object. Take a breath. Breathe in and out without rush or hurry. Fill the air. Fill your lungs. Fill your lungs. Push the air out again. I invite you to imagine with me. Imagine all that you know and have experienced. Every person, every creature, every tree, every rock, every drop of water. Begin to gather all of it together in one place. Now, try to imagine all that exists that you have not experienced directly. All the people, animals, plants, and all that exists in our world today. Gather all that together in the same place. Now try to imagine all that has ever existed on this planet and gather it too. Then imagine pulling in our luminous moon and our neighbor planets, and the rocky ones and the gassy ones, the cold ones and the hot ones. Pull these into your ever-enlarging circle. Bring to this our star, the sun, the source of our energy and warmth and light. As this gathering continues, begin to imagine gathering billions of stars and planets and dust and gas of our swirling galaxy into this gathering place. Gather them all, the nebula,
the new and the dying stars, every bit of dust and space, every galaxy, every bit of our universe. Gather it into your imagination. Now, imagine the immensity of all the universe, every atom, every moment of life, all of it that has ever existed. Imagine it all as a singular point, smaller than a grain of sand, of immeasurable density and heat, a single point floating in utter silence. At the precise moment of creation, that singular point suddenly began to expand, the fundamental building blocks of all space and time and matter, and you and I rushed apart in a massive inflation. Expansion, then, is a fundamental creative force in the universe, an ever-pushing apart, moving away from a single point. The instant of creation brought forth quarks and leptons exploding in all directions. And in the microseconds following that moment, they began to combine to form protons and neutrons. Contraction, then, is an equally fundamental force, a drawing together, a quantum to pull, to combine gravity. These two opposing dynamics, expansion and contraction, that have shaped the universe together, they are the rhythm of creation. This rhythm is embedded in our lives. We participate in this creative rhythm from the moment of our birth. Our lungs expand and contract, our hearts expand and contract. As they do so, we are keeping time, keeping the beat with creation.
Our second reading today is from Jack D. Forbes' book, Columbus and Other Cannibals. Forbes was a Native American writer, scholar, and political activist. He is best known for his role in establishing one of the first Native American studies programs and for founding the first Native American college located outside a reservation. Religion is, in reality, living. Our religion is not what we profess, or what we say, or what we proclaim. Our religion is what we do, what we desire, what we seek, what we dream about, what we fantasize, what we think. All of these things, 24 hours a day. One's religion, then, is one's life. Not merely the ideal life, but the life as it is actually lived. Religion is not prayer. It is not a church. It is not theistic. It is not atheistic. It has very little to do with what white people call religion. It is every act. If we tromp on a bug, that is our religion. If we experiment on living animals, that is our religion. If we cheat at cards, that is our religion. If we dream of being famous, that is our religion. And if we gossip maliciously, that is our religion. If we are rude and aggressive, that is our religion. All that we do and are is our religion. Please stand for our centering hymn, number 1058, in the teal hymnal. And Christy will play it through once on the piano.
I'd just like to say it's great to be back here and be asked to come back here. And I think you've all done a wonderful job in hiring a very talented and wonderful minister in Reverend Amy Shaw. I consider her a dear friend and colleague. And it's nice that I can actually run into her in a pick and save, which I actually did last week. When I'm in Chicago studying at Meadville Lombard for my classes there, I stay at a hostel, which is located in the Loop, and I love staying there because it's close, it's inexpensive, and I meet the most interesting people there. After eating with a colleague, I came back to that hostel late one evening, and as is my custom, I took the stairs, and then as soon as I opened the door and entered that stairwell, I heard glorious music. Heavenly four-part harmony. Just think of the acoustics and the reverberation in the stairwell. It sounded more like a Gothic cathedral. What was it? It sounded too good to be a recording. I went up a flight of stairs and saw no one. Then up another flight, and for a second I thought I was hallucinating. Then I saw that there was four young adults singing hymns. They were so perfect. I sat and listened and tried to join in. They were singing Be Thou My Vision. When they stopped, I told them that they sounded absolutely beautiful, and I asked if they were a religious group. They hesitated, looked at each other. Well, sorta. Well, what are you then? I replied. We are Mennonites. Now, the last time I checked, Mennonites were a religion. In fact, they're named after the founder Menno Simons, a German radical Protestant. They believed that the Reformation did not go far enough and that Christians should be different than society, that religion should permeate your whole life. Lo and behold, that Christian history course I took finally paid off. It turns out that the hymn singing quartet, the members were from all different parts of the country, and they just met up in Chicago. They had just spent 6 months on mission trips, not the old style evangelizing mission. They got their hands dirty and did social justice work. They were in Chicago to share their experiences with each other and to reacclimate back into American culture. They then asked me if I was religious. I paused thought about it for a second, and in that moment of hesitation, one woman asked, "Or are you spiritual?" I sheepishly answered, I am religious." So here are five people, four Mennonites just coming from a life-changing mission trip to South America, singing hymns, and a UU intern minister in the last year of seminary, all afraid or at least hesitant to say that they are religious. I'm sure many of you have heard it said or have said yourself, "I'm spiritual, but not religious." I think this has something to do with one's disdain or maybe a bad experience with organized religion. And for some, religion is just a bad word. In fact, there is a growing group of people in this country that do not identify with any religion. They have been called the nuns, not the ones in habits, but N-O-N-E-S. This demographic does not identify with any religion, but a majority of them claim to be spiritual. This really makes me wonder, what is exactly the difference between being religious and being spiritual? And of course, the following are my reflections and nothing more. I do not claim that they are universally true. But I think that spirituality is that inner experience that makes us feel meaning. It is completely hard to articulate, but yet invisibly real. It may be a moment one senses something, but it feels like permanence. Most often, it is felt unexpectedly, sometimes a shocking interruption, and it causes us to live in a new way. Spirituality can happen anywhere. A symphony orchestra concert, a hike to a waterfall, fed lake in the mountains, a walk in the Kettle Moraine, or even in church. It tends to be highly individualistic. You may have experienced something on that hike, but the person you're hiking with may have not. For me, spirituality does not necessarily mean God exists, or for that matter, that anything supernatural exists, but it may feel beyond the natural, everyday reality we normally experience. So religion, I think, is a little bit harder to define. Part of the problem is, ever since the Enlightenment and the Age of Reason in the 1600s and 1700s, there has been a dominance of rational thought that has reduced religion to a set of beliefs. So back to the hostel stairwell with the singing Mennonites. After I told them hesitantly that I was religious, that I was going to a seminary, that I was in the middle of an internship, then went the questions about what exactly is Unitarian Universalism. I said we were a liberal religion that was creedless. And of course, as you may have experienced, their response was, "So what do you believe?" I explained that we had a range of beliefs, that the Unitarians were of Puritan stock, and at some point they decided not to believe in the Trinity. And the Universalists, their big issue was with hell. They didn't believe in it. They instead preached that God was love. And about 50 years ago, we all joined forces, and now here we are, Unitarian Universalists, a diverse group of all faiths and beliefs. "You must believe in something," one person insisted. "Well, I can tell you what I believe, but I can't tell you what everyone else believes. There must be something that keeps you all together." Now, at the time, it was right about the time that the Supreme Court's decision on the Defense of Marriage Act. So I said, "Well, we all believe in gay marriage." After I said that, one woman said, "Wow, I want to become a Unitarian Universalist." Another asked me if I was evangelizing. I laughed. Unitarians don't evangelize. Well, then, how do you grow? I paused. Good question. Their insistence that we must have a central belief to hold us together is a very Western, compartmentalized, and narrow view of religion. It is in direct contrast to the previous reading from the Native American scholar Jack T. Forbes. He actually said that in his tribal language, they do not have a word for what white Westerners call religion. Religion is all-encompassing. It goes everywhere. Religion is not just a set of beliefs, but contains them. Religion is not just spirituality, but contains spirituality. Religion is a private thing, but it's also a very public thing. Because I think religion is in the business of making the spiritual come to the forefront of our consciousness and give it our intentional attention. Many view religion as just the institution or the organization of its people and leaders. Perhaps this is where people get a negative view of religion and identify with it less and less. However, in defense of institutions, which is a little bit hard for me to say, because it's just hard for me to even say the word institution. I'm not institutionalist by nature. With institutions, with this big entity, comes a sense of permanence. By that I mean, if I quit being a Unitarian Universalist today, it will go on. This church will survive. This movement will go on without me. That gives me a sense of hope. Religion is also the narratives, the doctrines, the stories we tell, and have them. Revelation is not sealed. We can change the world. We are all connected. Science and human reason is a source for truth. Like it or not, these are religious doctrines. But religion is more than just doctrines. It's morality, it's ethics, it's how we actually live. The fact that we believe human beings have rights and that we have a duty to care for the earth is a religious ethic. Religion is a difficult ethical path toward a new level of consciousness. Another big deviation from spirituality, religion is a very deliberate community walking together. We know, like a grove of trees, we stand taller and firmer together. Religion is relational. Not only is it relational to other people, but to the earth and to the universe. Jack D. Forbes goes on to say that I can lose my hands and still live. I can lose my legs and still live. I can lose my eyes and still live. But if I lose the air, I die. If I lose the earth, I die. If I lose the water, I die. If I lose the plants and animals, I die. All of these things are more a part of me, more essential to my every breath than is my so-called body. We are not autonomous, self-sufficient beings as European mythology teaches us. We are rooted just like trees. But our roots come out of our nose and mouth like an umbilical cord, forever connected with the rest of the world. Nothing that we do we by ourselves. We do not see by ourselves. We do not hear by ourselves. We do not think, dream, invent, or procreate by ourselves. We do not die by ourselves. Religion teaches us we are not alone. That we are all points of awareness, a circle of consciousness in the midst of a series of circles. All of these circles are not really separate. They are mutually dependent upon each other. Last year I had a busy June and July, besides taking classes in Chicago and singing with the Mennonites. I went to a UU camp in Ferry Beach, Maine. I went to General Assembly in Louisville for a week. By that time, I had had enough. I needed a break, and I didn't want to do religion in the month of August. But how foolish of me. Religion is not something we can turn on and off like a faucet. It's more like a river, continually flowing even in a drought. As Forbes put it in the reading, one's religion then is one's life. Not merely the ideal life, but life as it is actually lived. There should not be this hesitance for uttering the word religion, but there is in our culture, especially among the so-called millennials, people now that are in their 20s and early 30s. So we religious liberals are in a tough spot. We see the benefit of togetherness. We know we are healthier that way. We proclaim that truth unfolds in our midst, not from on high. But this is not what a lot of people think religion is. Traditional religion, people that practice traditional religion despise us. And potential UUs that are spiritual but not religious don't even know that we exist. In a recent edition of the UU World, the UUA president, Peter Morales, expresses how in the past, people became Unitarian Universalists because they were fleeing the doctrines of Orthodox religion. But he says now something new is struggling to be born. And he says that the nuns, you know, not the Catholics, they're searching for something deeper than the absence of dogma. They are seekers, like us, looking for an authentic experience of interdependence and connection. They want justice and know the importance of compassion, and I believe we have something to offer the spiritual but not religious. It's a third way between traditional religion and secular culture. But that means we have to start proclaiming who we are, and we have to discover our commonality and uniqueness together. So after reflecting on the Mennonite scene in the stairwell and our mutual hesitation to acknowledge that we were religious, if I had it all over again, I would say, I am spiritual and deeply religious. Indeed, we should all be proud that the way we live is religious, that the bonds we have with each other are religious. Our connection with the universe is religious. And the belief that we do not think, invent, or even die alone is indeed religious. Will our movement grow and will we reach the spiritual but not religious nuns? Only the mystery of a dark night knows the answer to that. But if we meet someone who says they are spiritual but not religious, perhaps we can tell them, I used to think that way until I became a Unitarian Universalist. We are called to a deeper connection. And like the singing Mennonites, we are called to go out into the world with our unique voices and meet up here together in a rich, complex harmony, breathing in the same air, connected, committed, and in community. And this
This is both spiritual and religious. Amen. And blessed be.
Thank you. We have a few minutes for polylog. If anyone would like to offer a comment or an insight or reflection about today's service, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone. Please be brief so everyone who would like to share gets a chance. Thank you.
Barb, thank you so much for your words. For a long time, I was spiritual but not religious because there was no place that I fit in. And the beauty of this religion, this body of people, is that you can be as weird as you really are, and be loved and accepted and encouraged, and that it's ongoing for me. Sometimes I articulate a little better than this, but it's just a joy to be in this place and acknowledge that everything we do is part of our religion.
I just want to remark, thanks for bringing up the idea of evangelism, and I don't consider myself someone who's, you know, evangelical in any way, but I think that is something that is sort of missing, and we need to think about just identifying. I even don't identify as a Unitarian anyone. I sort of say, oh, I go to a Unitarian church. I was in a meeting at work the other day, and one of the doctors I work with, I noticed on his lapel of his white coat there was a chalice, and I thought, oh, wow. I mean, people do, you know, put it out there in a little way. And I think that's something, as you use, is that they really have to sort of think about and maybe try to do it in a UU way, of course.
Hi, I'm Chris, and I have a couple friends that came to mind during your service that they are nuns and they're gay. And I'm constantly saying, you're so you, you just don't know. And I'm constantly trying to discuss, you know, the difference really between, you know, coming to a UU church. They're very spiritual. They believe a lot of our seven principles. So I guess I struggle a little bit because I want to respect their choice not to choose to be spiritual. But at the same time, I think that they would really embrace it. So I always am trying to talk to them about it, you know. And it's a struggle for me because they're two of my dearest friends. I just thought it was great that he kind of brought it all together to me. So thank you.
You make a good point about, say, the definition, the Western definition of religion. In sort of my growing spirituality, in bringing me here, was I had to get past what I thought God was. And very intimately tied in with Orthodox Christianity or mainstream Christianity, and because I didn't have a good feeling for that, for mainstream Christianity, therefore I didn't have a feeling for God. And later I could see God as separate. I mean, you can have the God of Judaism, you can have the God of Islam, you can have the God of a lot of different kinds of religions and faiths. So once I could kind of separate that in my head, then I felt better about saying, I believe in God, but maybe not the God you're thinking of, or the way you understand God. And then you make the point about religion. You know, if I think of religion differently, not the Western European sort of traditional idea of religion, then I'm going to have to think about that. Maybe I could say, yes, I am religious, as opposed to just spiritual. So it gave you good food for thought.
I think that every time you raise a child, you are developing a spirit. And that may be what religion is to guide the child, the next generation, along a spiritual, meaning spiritual being good, road. And I feel that as we go through our, let's say, spread out being throughout the world, we are losing our ability to parent. And maybe that's where the church comes in, as teaching how to parent and accept other people for what they are, and emphasize the good and diminish the quote unquote not so good.
I was glad that the answer to your question posed by the title of your talk was that we are religious, because I'm always looking for this. I remember, it wasn't that long ago, a couple of years ago, one, I think it was Texas, where they were trying to terminate the tax exemption that applied to the Unitarian church down there, and claiming it wasn't religion. And as a lawyer, I always want to see us being out there as a religion, because I don't want to have that happen to us. But I've always felt the same way, and I think we don't always express it that way. But I found I resonated very much with the way you put it. Thank you.
As you were talking, what came to mind to me was the importance of having a good elevator speech about what you believe. Because I grew up in a religion that had a lot of similarities to the Mennonites. And I would have hesitated just like they did, because I knew the next question would be, well, what church is that? Where, if you're Catholic or you're Lutheran, it's a one-word answer and people understand who you are. And I think now, being here, I kind of hesitate the same way, because I know the question's going to be, what is that? So I think just knowing, you know, having that not easy answer, but having a solidified view of what we believe is important when you are talking to people.
Hi, I'm Dan, and I can say as a, I don't know, as a former nun and maybe still a nun depending on the day of the week, I think a lot of us come to this church because of kids. I know that's what brought us here, is we recognize the need for the community and the religion for our kids. I think it's a lot harder for, especially those without children or without, you know, travesty going on in their life at the moment. It's harder to recognize that need for community, and we feel like we can just do it on our own. I think the word here is humility. You know, it's really difficult for adults to recognize that we are all connected in terms of humility, and that need for community and compassion, especially in the hard times, or especially when we realize that raising a child is much beyond what me and my wife can do. So it's just, you know, it's waiting and maybe being there at the right moment when someone like the woman over there that talked about their friends that are nuns right now, it's just waiting for that moment when they're in need and then being there, you know, for them. So.
Hi, I'm Gary, and
I also have a lot of nuns in my life, and I think that I struggle with saying that that I attend a church, and I think that that's really hard for a lot of people who are nuns, who are spiritual, but the word church holds a lot of negativity for them, because this is more than a church, this is a community, and I'd like everybody to think about that.
We have time for just one last comment.
All right. Hi, I'm Joe, and I guess I'm going to maybe not add a lot, because what I'm going to say has already been said many times, but I see spirituality as something that is me. So we all live on the earth, and we're all individuals, but we all live on the earth. And so spirituality is how I live on the earth, and it's my individual decisions and my individual choices. And religion to me is the earth. It's how I interact in a community, and how that community shares things that are important to me. And so that's the difference for me, is that it's my spirituality is my uniqueness, and religion is my being joined with a community.
Thank you. Thank you for everybody for your comments. James will be available in the social hall after the service if you'd like to talk with him. We extinguish this chalice, and may the light of love and the warmth of our shared giving be with us until we meet again. Our final hymn is number 20, Be Thou My Vision. Please rise as you're willing and able.
Benediction. The liberal religious tradition is an invitation, not a mandate. It points us in a general direction without a specific destination. It invites us to engage in dialogue without trying to control the conversation. We are to take commitment seriously, but not blindly. Liberal religion calls us to strength without rigidity, conviction without ideology, openness without laziness. It is a faith without certainty and beyond belief. Amen.